When you want to see the world, but you're stuck in the 9-to-5 grind, what do you do? Live vicariously through others, of course. Hear all about other travelers' experiences, lessons learned, and must-see attractions of countries across the globe. Welcome to the Travel Lust Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Travel Lust Podcast, the podcast where travelers tell their stories and you wish you were living them. Before I get started, I just wanted to say that I've been reading some of the reviews some people have left me on iTunes, and it just warms my heart. So if you feel like you get value out of this podcast, why not be like some of these amazing people and rate and review the show? And to keep up with my travels in real time, follow the podcast on social media. Just search for Travel Lust Podcast and it'll pop up. Finally, I have a challenge for you. Think of someone you know that loves traveling and introduce them to the podcast. Send me a message on social media telling me who you recommended the show to and why, and I'll give you a shout out in the next episode. Okay, this episode is a good one. Today I'm talking with Janie Wall, an American author, about her 500-mile hike in Spain walking the Camino de Santiago. And for Aussie listeners, that's over 800 kilometres. 800 kilometres! And I complain about having to walk up more than one flight of stairs. Okay, let's jump right in. Welcome to the podcast, Janie. For people who don't know much about you, do you want to tell me a bit about yourself and your travels?
Sure. Thank you, Chloe. My name is Janie Wall, and I wrote a travel blog for 3 years called Backpacking Detours, and it was an active lifestyle travel blog. And so my husband and I, we travel quite a bit. We live in the mountains of Northern California. And we own a small company, and it allows us to travel in the spring and fall during our season that's not as busy. So, I don't know. We've been to quite a few countries, and we really like long distance hiking. So that's kind of like one of our favorite things to do.
Amazing. How did you get into hiking?
I think because we live in the mountains, we've always hiked. Like, it's something that I remember doing when we first started dating.
Mm-hmm. And has hiking motivated you to travel? Do you travel specifically to hike in other countries?
We do. Yes. I think as we've gotten older, we have a little bit more freedom. And before, when we were young with our kids, we would maybe go to an all-inclusive resort and it was more of like relaxing and getting away from regular life. But now that we can travel more often without kids, we do like to relax at the beach or at a pool, but we also like to push ourselves mentally and physically. And then, like, at the end of the day, relax with wine or whatever.
And what have been some of your favorite places to hike?
Definitely in Spain, when we hiked the Camino de Santiago. We hiked for about a month around Ireland, and that was definitely a challenge with just being wet and not maybe the traditional trails we're used to. We hiked in Nepal up in the Himalayas on the Annapurna circuit. Like, every single one of these hikes I'm mentioning, they're like so much different than the previous one. And we've hiked in Peru, and that was really challenging. Yeah, they're all like very different from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned hiking the Camino. I believe you've actually written a book about that now.
Yes, we wrote a book. It's called Walking the Camino de Santiago, An Ordinary Couple on an Extraordinary Journey.
Mm-hmm. And what type of things do you go into in that book?
Well, we talk about basically like the steps it took us to kind of make the decision and the commitment to go hike the Camino. It was 500 miles from the south of France across northern Spain. And just what goes into the planning and the training and, you know, the gear, everything you need. And then we talk about, basically it's a day by day for 35 days of our experience.
And what type of physical toll did that have on you?
I think like the hardest part for me was the blisters. I had a lot of blisters on my feet. We averaged about 15 miles a day and we had full backpacks, and just, you can't really train for going day after day after day, you know, week after week. And so the blisters and just having like sore feet every single day. And even after I was home, it took a month for my feet to feel better.
That's crazy.
That was just really difficult.
Yeah, totally. I have to admit, I only got a gym membership this week, so that, like, I'm in awe of you.
That's awesome.
So what type of planning did go into this? What did you have to pack? Were you carrying a tent with you? Did you have a large backpack?
We chose to stay in lodgings along the way. So it's really set up for pilgrims. 200,000 pilgrims walk the Camino every year. And there, I don't know how many routes there are, probably like 4 routes or 5 routes. So it's a lot of people. And there are hostels and albergues, pensions. There are like 5-star hotels. So you can stay in whatever accommodation works for you. Like if you have a very low budget, you can stay in group accommodations with lots of pilgrims, like 50 people in a room in bunk beds. Or you can stay at the Parador, which is like a fancy 5-star hotel. So it just depends. And honestly, for us, it depended on the town, and it depended on how we felt. Like if we were so exhausted, I would just say, Scott, we are going to stay right there. Because we were just exhausted and needed to stay somewhere.
Totally. And what type of terrain was it?
Well, we hiked over the Pyrenees, so we hiked in some mountains. I don't think the elevation on the Camino, but we did the French route, is very significant, like very high. But we did hike through some mountain ranges. We hiked for a week on the Meseta, which is a flat, just flat, wide open space for the most part. And some people actually bypass that and ride a bus, but we enjoyed it. I think because it was like, we're used to hiking in the mountains at home in California. So it was just very different than what we were used to. And we liked it.
And what was it like when you finally reached the end of your journey?
It was a huge relief, and it was sad. Like, it was weird to be at the end. You know, the last day it rained really hard, and our friends had joined us the last 2 weeks. So we all came into town, and there were a lot more people, because sometimes people kind of bus in like the last 10 miles and just walk in like with church groups and things. And so it was like really crowded, and it was raining, and we were thinking back to like the whole last month and how it's all leading up to this. And it was interesting. I think we thought a lot about like what we had learned about ourselves as we walked in that last day.
Yeah, totally. I believe it is quite either a religious or a spiritual walk for people. What was the significance for you?
Yes, like 50% of the people walk for like very religious reasons, and then they say 50% walk for all kinds of other reasons. And for us, it was just like a personal growth challenge. Like we could be spiritual, but like kind of finding yourself and your strength, and our strength as being married, like being with my husband for 24/7 for, you know, I don't know, we were gone from home for 6 weeks. So for that much time to be with your significant other, like that shows a lot of, you know, fortitude. And there's just a lot of different aspects to look at, you know, physical and mental challenges.
Absolutely. What were some of the hardest parts for you outside of the blisters?
Oh, gosh. I think it's really dumb, but in Spain, they have siesta in the afternoon. And so you can't just go into a business and get like go to a restaurant and get food. It wasn't, and we're so used, like it's just part of our culture here that if I want to go to the store or a restaurant, there's something within 15 minutes of my house that I can eat or drink. And so it was very hard for us in the afternoons to come into the town, and like we can't just go get a late lunch or an early dinner. Like that freedom was kind of strange, and we just didn't get it. Like every day we'd come into town at like 2:30 and nothing would be open. And we're like, oh my God, what, maybe the next town. Like we understood it, but we just didn't quite get it.
Totally. And so what were some of the highlights?
I loved seeing the different villages. Like every few kilometers, there would be like a very small village, and the path always takes you past like the church or cathedral of every town. And so there's just history in every single town, and they're all different. And there's like little cafes, and you just didn't know. You wake up in the morning and say, okay, we're heading to this town, hopefully today. And if there's a room there for you, then you stay. And if not, you walk on to the next town. So it was just the unknown, I guess, that was really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so what was your training like in leading up to doing this pilgrimage?
Our training, so at home, that we left in early September, so the whole summer before, we spent a lot of time on the local trails, and we live near the Pacific Crest Trail. So we hiked on that. We practice yoga regularly, and we do like spin bike and that kind of stuff. And then as we got closer, like I think maybe the month before, we really used like our trekking poles, and we had our backpacks with weight in them to just get accustomed to walking, you know, longer distances.
And did you meet many people along the way?
Oh, yes. There's lots of pilgrims. In the summertime, as you go, it's really crowded, and a lot of people make reservations in different towns for their lodgings. But since we were there in September and October, there's still a lot of people, but it wasn't as busy. But we met people every single day from around the world. And if you wanted to talk, there was always someone to talk to. And if you didn't, and you just wanted to walk alone, which we did as well, then you could walk alone.
Totally. And what was the writing process like for you when you wrote this book after having this amazing journey?
Well, it started originally with blog posts, and then I decided to add a lot more to it and turn it into a book and self-publish it. It was a lot of fun to go back over everything and kind of dig into the historical parts a little bit more that I didn't exactly remember from, you know, specific towns and villages. And my husband is really good at keeping a journal, so that really helped a lot.
Yeah. Can you tell me a bit more about the blog that you run?
Yes. It's all about like active lifestyle travel. And so basically it's about whatever we would do in our travels as far as kayaking or bike tours, food tours, and lots of hiking, different things like that. We don't really add to the blog much anymore, but it's still there.
Mm-hmm. And do you use the book and blogs and things like that to fund your travels?
There's not enough money. I'm not like a very good salesperson, and that's why I realized I was spending way too much time on the blog and not like making money off of it. So that's why I just quit that and worked on the book. And then I also wrote another book with my husband on our hiking in Ireland. So we did that one. And then I'm just getting ready to release actually a gratitude journal. So I guess maybe over time, a little bit of money will come in to help supplement our travels, but it's just in very small. I think they call it mailbox money right now.
Yeah, totally. And what has been some of the other travels that you've done outside of hiking that have really stuck with you?
Oh, gosh. I spent a couple weeks in Turkey with my girlfriends, and that was so much fun, and just seeing the country. And we did a blue voyage for a few days on, I can't remember what the sea is right there, the Adnan Sea. Just eating like so much food, and I just enjoyed that a lot. And Scott and I think so far our favorite place we've been is Vietnam. And we did some hiking there, and we did a 3-day bike tour in the Mekong Delta. So we always try to get like some active stuff in as well, but we loved Vietnam. I think that's like on our list for sure to go back and maybe rent a motorcycle and just travel like more slowly through the country.
Yeah, absolutely. What is on your travel bucket list for 2019?
Let's see. Well, I went to Colombia in February with a couple of girlfriends, and Scott and I leave in a couple of weeks for Malaysia, and we're getting our paddy scuba certification for open water. So that's like something we've been thinking about for years, and we're finally going to do it. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's so exciting. And what are your top travel tips for other people that are avid travelers?
Let's see. I think like we really enjoy not making a lot of plans and reservations. And I think that that just allows you to be more spontaneous. If you really like a town or an area you're staying, you can stay for longer. Or if you don't like a place, you're not like committed to having these reservations for a certain amount of time. We prefer to travel that way, and usually not in the high season. So Malaysia is like completely the opposite of what we are usually doing, because it's the high season there. And so we're having to make reservations. But I would say take earplugs, like the best thing ever. Earplugs and any, I mean, if we've stayed in hostels, we've stayed in nice hotels, like airplanes, like earplugs for sure.
I know you've said that you travel with your husband a lot. My boyfriend and I just went on our first trip overseas together to Japan, and everyone was saying to us, it's going to be a real test on your relationship. How do you find traveling with your husband?
I love that episode, by the way. It makes me want to go to Japan. I really do. It's definitely. They actually have some very big hiking in Japan that I want to go check out.
That sounds
amazing.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I got sidetracked with Japan, so tell me your question again.
Yeah, how is traveling with your husband? Do you guys get along well when you're traveling?
You know, we do. We travel really well together. The only thing that's a little bit difficult is he is kind of like the type that's always going, and when he stops, then he sleeps. And so like when we were in Vietnam, we like go bike riding and we're at the beach. And then we come back to the hotel and I'm like, okay, I just want a glass of wine and get in the pool and cool off. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go ride bikes for a little while. Like, he doesn't sit still as well as I do. So that's probably our only thing, which isn't really a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah, you probably have it pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. So you're saying that you want to go to Japan to do some more hiking. Hiking seems to be a real passion for you.
Definitely. Yes. We're actually going back to Spain in the fall of 2020 for my birthday to hike another route of the Camino de Santiago. So that'll be like all that summer before we'll be training for that. Mm-hmm. I think we like the training part of it all too. Like it gets us out. It's like get up a little more up into the mountains. Like we live maybe an hour from Lake Tahoe. So go up above Lake Tahoe and hike at like maybe some little bit higher elevation stuff.
Amazing. And so how long will you be hiking this time when you go back to Spain?
I think it's a little bit longer. I think it's like 800 and something kilometers. So probably 5 or 6 weeks, I think. Yeah. If we can work it out from work.
Are you worried about your feet?
No, but I think I'm more nervous, like thinking about doing it again, because I know it's like so hard. Even though it's like such a great experience, it's hard. Mm. It's really hard.
How do you overcome the mental challenge of it?
It's funny because when we walked before, and even like when we were just last fall, we were up in the Himalayas, and I don't ever feel like I want to quit ever, like doing that kind of thing. Like that's not even an option, even if I'm like miserable or like at the high altitudes up on the Annapurna circuit. Like I didn't ever want to quit, but I was just slow, you know, like I can do this all day long. I'm just slow, or I just need to stop and take more breaks to breathe or whatever. So yeah, I don't doubt myself. I just kind of just keep going.
That's amazing. And I know you said you're bringing out a gratitude journal. Is that a big part of it for you as well?
Yes, I'm super excited for that. It's called Positive Beginnings, your journal of mantras and gratitude. And so it'll be for people to write about, like they'll start their day with a mantra, and then they'll journal at the end of the day only the positive things that happened, three things they're grateful for. And I just like I feel like I'm pretty positive in general, and I want to encourage other people, because I think you can really change your life by changing how you look at things in a different way. And if you just start focusing on positive every day and thinking about that mantra through the day, and thinking during the day, what am I grateful for that I can write down later tonight? So I'm hoping to share that, and hopefully it helps some people.
Absolutely. And how did you get into blogging and eventually becoming an author? Was that something that was always a passion of yours?
No, not really. I think really we travel a lot, and I like to write about it, and I would always journal everything. And so then I decided to start a blog, and I thought, oh, if I can make some money, then that'll help with the travel. But it didn't really go that way. But I just love telling the stories, and it's like having this amazing thing to look at whenever we want. You know, it's like, oh, you go back and look at some of those stories from the beginning. I mean, we stopped a year ago, so we did it 3 years. So, you know, from stories from four or five years ago, and it's like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that day in Belize when we lost our backpacks and they went on a different boat, you know? So it's just a fun, I think the book kind of happened accidentally because of the Camino, and I just wanted to help someone else who would maybe think about doing the Camino and just let them know what's involved. And then that's what happened with Ireland, because there aren't a lot of books about hiking specifically in Ireland that aren't guides. And so I want people to see, okay, this, if you hike in the fall, this is what you can expect. And this is what these trails are like. And this is what the people are like and the pubs. And I just felt like it could help someone if they're looking to go there and do something like that.
And how did hiking in Spain differ from hiking in Ireland? What were the different challenges?
I think, like in Spain, we just follow the arrows, whether it's on pavement or dirt roads or trails. It's pretty easy to just find your way, and there's always a town relatively close by. In Ireland, it was more you follow the way markers, so there's not really a trail in a lot of the trails areas we were in. So basically you look up the hill and you see a way marker. So you just aim for that. And you could be going through like the wettest, muddiest bogs. You just have to get to that post. And once you get to that post, you can see, you look all around and then you see, oh, there's another post way over there. And so you just kind of like make your way across the mountains, and it's very different. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's just harder and slower.
Yeah. And do you get to do much tourist-like things when you are stopping in at each town, or is it just stop, rest, get up, on to the next place?
Well, we like to drink, so we always are like, oh my gosh, I'm like super into being rewarded at the end of my workout. So we're like always having wine and eating good food. And we like, if our feet aren't killing us too much, we like to see like whatever historical, whatever's going on in that town or village. But we mostly like to sit and drink wine, listen to music, and eat a lot.
I can relate. I love my food.
Yes.
What was some of the best food that you had when you were in Spain?
Oh, gosh. We had, let's see. Oh, it was called tortilla patata. Well, that's what we called it. We could be butchering that name for sure. Most mornings we have that for breakfast. And it's like an egg and potato kind of, I guess, like a quiche or something. That was good. And the cafe con leches every day were so good. There's like pilgrims menus in a lot of the places we stayed. So we'd have like dinner with other pilgrims and have kind of a set menu where you chose like a protein and a carb and maybe, I forget what else, a dessert. And so usually I would have pasta and Scott would have like something maybe more adventurous, like a fish or something.
Did you have much trouble with the language barrier being in smaller, less tourist towns?
I don't remember really having problems with it. I think people could always make clear what they like wanted you to do or didn't want you to do. And I really found everyone to be very helpful. And we really try to like learn the language, especially as we're walking. Like sometimes Scott would want to practice our Spanish while we were walking. And if my feet were killing me, I'd just be like, I can't do this right now. Just let me think and walk. And I can't do Spanish right now. But I think we always manage to make do wherever we go. We learn some of the basics.
And what was some of the most scenic parts?
Oh gosh. We were just really impressed with some of the cities and the huge cathedrals, and there are a lot of tours you can take, like audio tours and things. We enjoyed that a lot. We like the town squares and listening to music in the squares and that kind of thing. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. And what are some other countries that you are dying to go to?
Gosh. Oh, I have a huge list. Okay, let me think. Austria, Germany. We want to hike across England. I think it's called the Coast to Coast Trail, and spend some time in England and Wales. Oh, gosh. I want to go to Morocco and Tunisia and back to Turkey so I can go to Cappadocia to ride in the hot air balloon. Oh, my gosh. The Philippines. I don't know. Back to Vietnam. Oh, Africa. Oh, yeah. Africa. We're going there probably in the fall. My husband's listening and he's like, you're forgetting where we're going.
Well, it sounds like you've got a lot of pretty exciting things planned.
Yeah, we're trying. I always have kind of a little list going of like, okay, where do we want to go next?
Yeah. I think going to the US actually is next on my bucket list. So I'll have to hit you up when I want some tips.
We have room. We have 2 spare bedrooms.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm pretty excited to go. There's so much to see.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me, Janie. Where can people find you online?
They can find me on Facebook, Backpacking Detours, and Twitter is Backpacking Detours, and I think Instagram is Janie Wall.
Fantastic. Okay, was there anything else that you wanted to say?
I think if anyone's like thinking about the Camino, the most important message I could probably tell people is it doesn't matter like how many miles of it you walk. If you only want to do 100 miles or 50 miles or 500 miles, it's still special and you'll get so much out of it. And then my other little tip about that is don't go walk the Camino for someone else. Like you have to want to do it yourself because it's, you know, a huge challenge and there's a lot of ups and downs that go with it. And you have to know that it's something in your own heart that you want to do.
That is a really good point. Oh, well, thank you so much, Janie. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Chloe. I loved it. It was fun.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.